Attention all sci-fi fans. Tyler and Luke's opinions on this movie are not a direct reflection of the Cine Bros podcast and in no way, shape, or form actually matter and should not be taken seriously. Viewer discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cine Bros podcast. Today's episode is actually our second attempt at recording this first part. So if anything sounds off at certain points in the podcast, that's because we've had two different recordings spliced together. But let's just start like we're doing it new. Dylan, you're back. That's how we started it off. Dylan, you're back.
Yes, thank you guys for having me back.
Dylan, you sound a lot less...
I think you're our bad luck charm, because every time you come on, we always have to re-record something.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's true. Yeah. We recorded it over like 4 days.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why if you listen to it like the entire way through, when Dylan cut the story time, we didn't actually record us saying like, let's go to a sponsor break. So that's why there was just like a music cue in to the sponsor.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
I was listening. I was like, mm-hmm. There's not the typical a word from our sponsor, from Tyler.
That's why. But there's a new voice on this podcast. So new voice, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Tristan Evans, and I used to work with these four losers. I'm just kidding. They're really cool guys. Yeah, and I'm just here to give my spiel about why I love 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yes, that is indeed the topic of today's episode. It's a movie that Tristan loves very dearly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It is easily in my top 20 movies of all time.
And unfortunately, 2001 is a movie that I personally think is so stupendously overrated.
And you're wrong.
But we do have two more people with us. We got Luke and Dylan again. Luke, you're here always, but Dylan, you're guesting as well. So, Ray, since you're moderating this debate because you haven't seen 2001, do you want to tell us a little how it's going to work?
So this debate's going to be the same as any other debate. We're going to open it up with an opening argument, followed by round one, which will be the writing. Then we'll go into round two, which will be the directing. Then we'll go to round three, which will be the acting. And we'll go in it with the closing argument. Except this debate, we have two teams. We have Dylan and Tristan. And in the other corner, we have Tyler and Luke.
All right. So that sound good with everybody?
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me.
All right. So, Ray, you can cue us off whenever you're ready.
So to open up the great debate of the 2001 A Space Odyssey, let's hear an opening argument from the home team, Tyler and Luke.
All right, I will keep my opening argument very brief, because much like Star Wars The Last Jedi, I don't deny that 2001 is a good movie. You know, it's obviously a very influential movie. It, along with the original Blade Runner, is probably the most influential sci-fi movie ever made. But if you look past its technical achievements, which are far ahead of its time and do deserve the praise that it gets, the movie is such a bore to watch. And I say that as someone that loves my slow burn, like, sci-fi movies. And it bored even me. Stanley Kubrick, like most of his films, adapted 2001 from a book. Except in this case, it was a short story by Arthur C. Clarke. And the short story was only 6 pages. And it definitely felt like that. So 2001 is a 2-hour and 38-minute-long movie, and the fact that it was adapted from such a short story, you can tell, at least to me, that there are certain points that were just stretched out with their visuals in order to expand their runtime. Like, this movie could have easily been 20 to 30 minutes in like a short film format or like a technical demo, but I will expand further on my arguments as to why I don't like the movie and why I think it's overrated in future rounds. So I'm going to cede my time over to Tristan.
When it comes to significant figures of cinema, there are few that are really able to stand against Stanley Kubrick's track record. And I think 2001 is the perfect epitome of revolutionizing an industry. It's laid the groundwork for movies like Star Wars and Interstellar and Alien, and it uses this combination of incredible special effects that for its time were absolutely new, and interesting writing that maintains the eerie and off-putting atmosphere of space, beautiful cinematography, and a score so grand and diverse that each note fits perfectly alongside each shot. It's stood the test of time when it comes to movies that you can still sit down and enjoy as a sci-fi fan. it sets the groundwork for the future of cinema. And even in doing so, it forces me to come back and want to keep watching it and keep studying it. There's little things you pick up on that you didn't notice the first time you watched it, and they foreshadow events that will occur in the future. And there's some things that you'll just never notice until you watch a YouTube video on it. But it's so phenomenally made and absolutely perfect in every way that it's hard for me to say anything bad about it. Yes, there are times when it can drag, and I'll argue against that later on. But either way, it is revolutionary for the movie industry in general, and it's absolutely stood the test of time.
Let's hear back from Tyler's team. Let's hear from Luke.
Okay, yeah. So obviously, you know, no one can dispute or is trying to dispute that this movie is a technical achievement, especially for its time. And a lot of the effects still look very good. The effects are obviously beautiful. Everything, the cinematography is beautiful. Space looks realistic and lived in. All of that stuff is awesome. And the central storyline of this movie is also really good when it's actually there. A large portion of this movie is just the special effects. And basically Stanley Kubrick flexing the effects that he has at his disposal at the time. You know, obviously the effects are impressive, but if your movie mainly relies on that to hold intrigue and to support a narrative that's really paper thin, and Tyler even said it's like a 6-page short story, then it's definitely an exercise in style over substance. And more often than not, I don't really like those type of movies. I like for my narrative to be well defined, and I like for of the characters to be very well written and drawn out. And of course, I know that isn't this movie's goal. This movie isn't about the characters necessarily. It's more of a vehicle for the impressive special effects. But that's just not something that I'm interested in watching. And I think it hurts the movie when the main central story of the film is so brief. I mean, again, 6-page short story, I keep going back to that, but think about it. This movie stretched out, I mean, it's like 2.5 hours long and or around there. I don't know the exact runtime, but the vast majority of that is just special effects and Stanley Kubrick having an exercise in special effects. So while it is groundbreaking, the narrative not really being there and large portions of the movie, nothing actually happens. That's just not something enjoyable to me. And I think it hurts the movie. And I do think it's very overrated despite how influential it is. That is all I have to say about it, though, for right now.
Okay, so after hearing from Luke, let's hear from the great Dylan Arrington from Team Tristan.
So pretty much backing up what Tristan said, I think he really said a lot of what I think about the movie personally. I've seen this movie countless times and have studied it. And I look to this movie more as like a one of the almost as like an artwork, honestly, like a painting. Really, it can be interpreted so many different ways. And the way that the narrative is told, much of which without dialogue, I think is what draws me toward it. And I think it excels in doing that part. I love the score in the film. I think it's very ominous and really sets the mood of all the scenes. Like everyone has said, yeah, the cinematography is incredible. Kubrick really utilizes the one-point perspective shot style that he's known for a lot in this film. The characters are great. I think the main character, Dave, I think is a great representation of the audience watching the movie. And of course, the infamous Hal is a great antagonist. And a lot of the themes are still relevant today, I think. And just putting it into perspective as to how that film came out in the 60s, I think is really something special that it still holds up today. Yeah, I think that's all I got to say about it.
Okay. So if no one has anything further to add, let's move into round one, which will be the writing round. And Tristan, why don't you start this round since Tyler opened up with the opening round?
So the first thing I want to start out with when it comes to writing is how this movie is intended to be interpreted however you wish. So the writing's left open in a lot of spaces, such as the beginning when it's with the dawn of man, or even in the ending scene in that strange room. It's left for you to figure it out yourself and decide what this movie really means. A definite answer doesn't allow you to question the movie or put yourself into deep thought. It can be watched casually for sure, but you will certainly be left with more questions than answers. Answering those questions is where I find the most joy of this movie and how I believe it's how it's supposed to be watched. Yes, there's not a lot of dialogue, and yes, there's a lot of space in between these scenes, but at the, that, pun intended. I wish I put in my notes, pun intended. I didn't. I just thought of that.
Wow.
But answering these questions of what's going on is where I find the most joy. When I rewatched this movie with Lorelai, my girlfriend, we had an argument for 30 minutes, okay, on whether or not the monolith was organic or if it was artificial. And she watched the entire movie and believed it was organic. And I thought that was awesome and phenomenal how you can watch the movie and totally interpret it a totally different way. When it comes to the writing itself, you get such iconic lines like, open the pod bay doors, Hal, or even, I'm sorry, Dave, but I can't do that. And I think Hal's character himself is one of the eeriest villains in cinema. And you talk about the beautiful scene with him and Dave towards the climax of the movie, you know, where Dave's storming onto the ship. There's so much depth to Hal, and yet such, at the same time, there's not a lot shown. Like one thing I noticed that was really cool that was written in, Hal and Frank have a chess game really early on in the movie, and Hal stops Frank and he's like, well, Frank, you missed it. I think it's bishop to, or queen to bishop six. But if you look at the screen, and based on the rules of chess at the time, he actually moves it to three. So you can tell immediately that something, well, you can't tell immediately, but if you were to analyze it, you're like, wait, that's wrong. Hal's made a mistake. This shows that he is somehow not as perfect as he believes he is. It's crazy that Kubrick can write in such small details of a movie, and it's able to just, and it's not seen on your first watch. It's just, it just flows into it, you know? And then you go back and watch it and you're like, well, is that right? Is that how it's supposed to be? And Kubrick, knowing the hard ass he is, he put it in there intentionally. So I just think that the writing itself is impeccable, and there's not really much Tyler can say to prove me otherwise.
Wow.
Tyler, would you like to try to prove him otherwise?
Yeah, I'd like to try.
Are you done first, Tristan?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done, okay. For now, until he says something stupid.
All right, well, Tyler, let's hear it.
Well, I think there's a lot I can do to combat Tristan's argument. You know, first off, we are debating the writing in this movie, so I'll pose the question, what writing? There is none. This is a 2.5 hour long movie, and there's a 13-page script. The first line of dialogue doesn't occur until half an hour into the movie, Tristan. How many people watch this movie, and when nothing happens for the first half hour, are going to turn it off and think it was the worst movie they ever watched? How many?
If they are genuinely interested in the movie, if they care totally about dialogue, then it'll happen. But the movie's not just about dialogue. It's about watching it and watching events unfold.
That's true. But again, the first half hour, what events unfold? Not many. It's just two competing tribes of apes going at each other, barely.
But it's such an impactful moment. That is when apes learn to use technology and however, or not use technology, but learn to make their own tools. And if you notice, like, whenever they're in the very beginning, they're all hunched over and they're just screaming at each other. But once they find those bones and they learn how to use them as weapons, the ones that hold them, they stand upright. They stand normal. It just shows, like, how did those apes learn that knowledge? Well, it's from the monolith. Like, that's how they learned it.
Well, sure, but this is a half-hour scene. You can do that same thing within 5 minutes.
But would it be as impactful?
Yes.
I don't think it would be. I think the fact that you sit there and watch it and you watch these events unfold in a slow manner, you're like, what is this leading up to? And then when it gets to the climax of that act, it's like, wow, that happened. This is how this happened. This is how the apes learned to use tools.
Or you know what? Here's another way to write it that takes about 5 minutes, 10 at absolute maximum. So you open with the fight between the two competing tribes. One tribe gets absolutely demolished. Mm-hmm. Most of them are killed, and the lone survivor, or one of the only survivors, is exiled from little ape community and goes away, and he's scrounging for food and finds the bones. The monolith appears. He realizes he can use the bone as a tool. He comes back by himself, and because he is the only one that has this knowledge of the bone as a weapon, he walks right up to the leader of the other tribe, kills him, and everything is resolved within 5 minutes.
That doesn't seem as impactful. I feel like it's better that the whole tribe discovered the monolith and all obtained that knowledge, and then they went and took back what was theirs.
Hmm.
I feel, but then again, that's a matter of opinion. It's whenever it comes to changing the movie itself, That's a matter of, like, here's what you would think would be better, but we're kind of judging it how it is.
Yes.
You dig?
And I'm using that as an example of why I think the opening act, The Dawn of Man, is so drawn out. You know, I'm a big fan of, like, slow burn sci-fi movies, but I was bored. Like, I was like, okay, this is a space odyssey. Why are we on Earth and why are we in the prehistoric era? Like, let's get some space on.
Yeah, I can respect that. I can respect it not jumping immediately into the cool space stuff. But I think it likes to, it represents where humanity starts, you know? It's seeing, like, this is where we started, and then it makes the jump with the iconic bone throw, which I'm going to chime in here and say that, I'll be honest, watching that bone throw and transforming into the ship the second time didn't do it for me. I'll give that one point to Tyler for that, because, like, it was not as good as I remember it the first time. But I think it's a strong representation of where humanity started and then where it ended up. You know, it's interesting to see, this is how apes got their knowledge, and then we'll get into what they did with said knowledge.
That is fair. And, you know, that is exactly what he was going for. But my argument is simply, I don't think it needed to be nearly that long.
I understand. Understandable.
And you know what? Okay, finally moving on from that scene. You know, after the first half hour, we finally get to the space station with the little dialogue between the American astronaut and the Russian astronauts and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would argue none of that needed to happen at all. So,
you don't think so?
We're just going to disregard that entire scene and switch to 45 minutes in. So at this point with the writing, we're staying at 45 minutes of this movie gone and nothing of interest has happened. Not a single thing. So let's go to where they arrive. Is it the moon that they arrive on with the monolith?
It is the moon. Can I actually say something about the dialogue that you were just referring to?
Of course, feel free.
I think that's, it shows how, because Haywood talks about how he's going to the moon. Haywood's the American astronaut, or yes. I think he's not even really an astronaut. He seems more higher level.
He is the director of the United States National Astronaut Center, I think.
That's what it is. Astronautics or something. But it kind of shows, I don't know if you know how Stanley Kubrick created this movie, but he kind of split it into three episodes. There's your first episode, which is The Dawn of Man, the second one, which is the discovery of the monolith, and the ending, which is the Dave and Hal sequence and pool, and then the very ending part is counted in that episode. But I think the second episode is very important in the sense that it's to show you how, for its time, it's to show you how everybody's keeping it a secret. What they found on the moon is kept a secret. When he talks about, the Russian astronaut talks about the epidemic and how it could affect their base, and he was like, oh, I'm not at the liberty to say anything. I think it's important to show the secrecy that really goes on behind the doors of the government. And that's just, and especially for that time, 1968, you know, I would assume there's not, at that time, it wasn't a hot topic, you know?
Okay, sure. And yeah, that's a good point. That's what was trying to go on that scene. But again, it's just not interesting. Like, it's not interesting. Nothing happens. They're just talking.
I think the dialogue itself kind of makes it unsettling. It gives you this eerie feeling that there's something going on the moon that nobody's really allowed to know, and we don't know it until we see it.
You see, I completely disagree, because there's not really many stakes. Like, there's nothing hinted towards this, like, oh, the space isn't responding. Yeah, yep, nope, probably just equipment malfunction, let's move on. And they don't really focus on that. They don't, like, kind of draw it out with, like, any sort of events or anything that have happened surrounding the base. They kind of like, oh, yeah, it's not responding. Well, yep, moving on, though.
Well, they do. The Russian guy is the one who says it's not responding, and then yes. There's rumors of an epidemic, and then Haywood obviously knows there's something wrong there. He kind of just segues it into, I can't really tell you what's really going on.
Well, sure, but you have to keep in mind the context of this movie. We're half an hour into this movie when this starts. We have no background as to what is going on. We don't know what this base is or anything. And they spend so little time. Like, sure, they might briefly mention an epidemic, but again, it just moves on and is not referenced again. Like, I don't think that is focused on nearly enough to build up the eerie atmosphere that you talk about.
Well, you're wrong. I think that it's... I think it does. I think it uses that perfectly to segue into... Because it starts out, it's kind of happy. Haywood talks to his daughter as soon as he gets there. Then he talks to the Russian astronauts, and they're like, oh, something's up, what's up? And then he's like, oh, nothing much, dude, nothing's up. And they go into the base, or into the conference room, and he's talking like, what we just found is crazy. We need to keep it a secret. Everybody here is going to sign like agreements to keep it to themselves and not tell anybody. It's very important. It's like, whoa, what is this? That's important. And then they're going to the moon, and then all of a sudden you see it. You know, I feel like there was enough, there was plenty of buildup for you to be left in the dark on it and to still build up that suspense.
And this is where I disagree with you.
And this is where we agree to disagree.
Yes, it is. But moving past it even further, the moon sequence where they discover the monolith.
Yes.
First interesting thing to happen in the movie, it takes place about 45 minutes into the movie. In fact, I'll go so far as to say you could cut the first 45 minutes of the movie entirely and lose nothing of value.
Big disagreement.
Onto the actual scene itself, you know, the discovery of the monolith with the sun hitting it lets out the most obnoxious sound I have ever heard a movie do. It sounds like a dog whistle, and it is prolonged.
That's the point of it. It's not supposed to make you feel comfortable. It's not supposed to be like all rainbow and sunshine, like, oh wow, this thing's making a noise. That's so awesome. I wish I heard this noise more often. It's meant to be off-putting to the viewer.
Moving past all this, we're finally at like the hour mark. Mm-hmm. And this is where we meet Dave, Hal, and Frank, is it?
Yep, Frank Poole.
This is the central, well, no, not the central. This is a plot point in the movie, and it's the only interesting one, in my opinion. The dynamic between these three and Hal, especially, who, in my opinion, you know, is the best character in the movie and the only one that is really relevant to the story. However, this plot point, right, it takes place mm-hmm. from about the hour to probably 2 hour mark, so about an hour there. You could cut it down to like 20 minutes if you cut away all the B-roll and stuff on it.
I disagree. I think that how they left it is perfectly fine. Like I said, it's a slow burn. It's like it's gonna hit you, and it does hit you, especially closer to the climax. But I feel like there's a lot of suspense building around it, you know, especially early on in that scene when they're talking about how the HAL 9000 is perfect and nothing's ever been wrong with it. You know, it's like, well, that makes it sound like there's going to be something wrong with it.
That is true.
I think it builds the suspense and tenseness itself, however, especially in those scenes.
However, you know what? I have another critique of this scene. I don't think we get nearly enough time with HAL acting normal before he goes off the rails and tries to derail the mission. Like, I think it'd be much more, so again, it goes down to that first 45 minute to an hour before this, where like we didn't see any of these characters. If mm-hmm. we had been on that spaceship the entire time with HAL acting normally, and then we cut back to like the discovery of the monolith on the moon, and then he starts going crazy, that would have been a lot more impactful to me than what actually happened in the movie.
I can respect that. I can respect like trimming down the scene where they're watching the interview and putting in more HAL, because you can't get enough of HAL in this movie.
But you know, the HAL stuff happens, and you know, I will say that's where the best writing happens, with the death of HAL being an extremely good scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to yet another 45 minutes with nothing happening. No dialogue whatsoever.
I'm going to disagree and say just because there's no dialogue doesn't mean that something's not happening. There's plenty of stuff happening. They're just not talking.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff happening, but it makes no sense. It's just colors and effects.
Yeah, that stuff's really cool. But I think that was really a testament to to the special effects during that time. I think it was really.
This is writing, Tristan. This is writing.
Oh yeah, it is the writing section. Oh, I forgot. Oh no. Yeah, you can continue on if you want.
You know what? I think I'm going to bring that.
Let's let Luke and Dylan chime in.
Yeah, I'm going to bring that to an end. I've said enough.
let's let Dylan first.
As far as the writing goes, when I was like I said, when I was over in Seattle, I bought this script. There was a script store there, and I
wrote. Dylan, isn't it like 13 pages?
The one that I have isn't 13 pages. No, it's like it's not like, you know, your average like 100, 120.
But it's but like in terms of like dialogue.
Oh, in terms of like dialogue, I mean. Well, yeah, it is. There's not a lot of dialogue in the movie, yeah. But I enjoyed reading it and studying it. I thought it was. I think this film is very well written. I'm a big fan of watching movies where there's not a lot of dialogue in them, because it's incredibly hard to film something and convey things happening without dialogue. But I think this movie, I think, does a great job with it. I know you guys were talking about the scene where he flies into the monolith and all the colors are happening. And, you know, to me, I think it was, you know, I always think of the monolith as like aliens or something like that, some sort of like other being. And I think Kubrick was trying to convey it in a way that the human mind was not
strong enough to comprehend everything that they were saying to him. There was a barrier there, so he had to do it some way without. I think it would be kind of corny if the aliens actually talked to him. I wouldn't have liked that, but. Yeah, I think the writing is great, and the dialogue that's in the movie I think is stellar. I mean, the sequences with Hal and Dave, particularly when he's deactivating him, and Hal kind of exists these human emotions of fear of dying, I think are great, and they affect his voice a lot in that scene. Yeah, like Tristan said, the iconic open the pod bay doors, Hal. Yeah, that's a great scene, and you know the whole beginning sequence. I am usually very patient when I watch movies, particularly when there's not a lot of dialogue going on. I think a stark contrast would be how this movie opens, where there's not a lot happening, so to say, with the apes, and you compare that to like the Rise of Skywalker first 45 minutes, and so too much happens there. Like there's way too much going on. It flies right through the script, and it left me dizzy watching that. I expect the craft that Kubrick went to really slow burn and make the audience feel that way. And I actually really like the transition with the bone. I thought that was a really cool cut. I mean, thinking about it back in the day on how to get that cut perfect, I mean, it's tough. But yeah, I agree with everything Tristan said, and this film does take a lot of patience, but I think it's well worth it in the end. Just the ending scene is one of the most haunting and beautiful things I've ever seen in film. So that's all I have to say.
All right, Lucas?
So for me, the biggest problem with 2001 A Space Odyssey is its exploration of its themes. Now, obviously, and Tyler talked about the main plot line with Hal and Dave and Frank that's really good stuff. It's just very enjoyable filmmaking, and it's pretty interesting. But again, the movie takes so much time. And as Tristan was saying, it is very much up to audience interpretation, which I like that in a film. This movie, I think it's so much to where it's a fault of the movie. Because there are, even though a lot of it is weird and a lot of it, on first glance doesn't make sense, there are themes you can pick out. There's a lot about existentialism and human evolution and technology and all kinds of stuff like that that are obviously present during the movie. And obviously, I don't want the filmmakers to present it as, well, here's our view on this. We're presenting our view on it, and you have to agree with it. And if you don't, you're not going to like the movie. I don't like that, obviously. I like that they allow the audience to interpret it. But in this movie, I mean, it's almost like I want to see them try to explore the theme. All they do is present it. And they don't really have there's not much of an attempt by the script to dive into these themes much. They just kind of plant the idea in your head and allow you to expand on them, which I think is a fault of the writing. Because you obviously hear the expression, show, don't tell. But that doesn't mean, that's not literally like, don't tell me anything. I mean, almost the entire movie is up to audience interpretation, and there's no real vision on display. It's just basically, here, think about this, is all it is. And for me, that's just not very interesting. I obviously like to think during a movie, but I mean, all you're doing the entire time is deciding in your head what's going on. It's like they didn't really have an idea as to how to explore these themes. They just kind of presented them to us and wanted us to do all the heavy lifting. That is my biggest problem with the movie. And also, and Tyler's talked about this, the main plot line is good, obviously, but it is so detached from like the first 45 minutes and everything going on. And honestly, you could separate the main plot of the story with Hal and the astronauts and all of the stuff at the beginning and stuff near the end that gets really deep and into all kinds that are basically like a special effects show, and separate those into two different movies, because essentially they seem like two different movies. They don't really relate to one another. Obviously, the monolith comes into play later on. But aside from the monolith showing up, that was also in the beginning of the movie, at the dawn of man, the two main, the main plot seems totally disconnected from everything else they were trying to do. So there's a lot of inconsistencies in the writing. And again, show, don't tell, obviously, but tell me something. That doesn't mean don't tell me anything. This movie only serves to present its themes, and it doesn't explore them very well. That's just my opinion on it.
Okay. Anything else to add, anyone?
I've got more to say on that, but that'll be in the directing section, because a lot of the stuff with interpretation I put in the directing section for my notes. So I'm good.
Okay. Since you were both good on round one, which was a way closer round than the opening argument, we'll go into the directing now. We'll start with Tyler, since Tristan started the writing round.
Sure. And I will keep my argument for this round brief because, you know, as we've already discussed, that Stanley Kubrick is one of the most influential, if not the most influential filmmaker to ever live. His direction techniques and the techniques that he used to make this movie in the 1960s are phenomenal. This movie still holds up today in terms of its special effects and the techniques that were used. However, so, you know, I can't just go around praising Stanley Kubrick all day because that would immediately lose around. So I'm going to disagree with how Mr. Kubrick adapted this story. You know, I'm not going to say that I would be any better at adapting short stories than Stanley Kubrick, because that's kind of what he was known for. However, this short story that he adapted it from is extremely short. To me, does not have enough there to spawn a 2.5 hour long movie. And I feel that Kubrick tried too much to make up for the shortfalls of the story by just throwing a bunch of special effects in your face. You know, the entire, like, 45 minutes of the finale of the movie where it's just, like, colors and effects and everything. Did it really need to be that long? I don't think it did. And, you know, I kind of touched on in the writing a little bit where the main plot point of Hal and the two astronauts could have been cut down to 20 minutes. He interrupts scenes in this movie with just B-roll for the sake of B-roll. It doesn't need to be there. And I'm sure that Tristan is going to make the argument that it sets up, like, the world. It shows the world that he's living in. Well, I'm going to bring up another movie, another famous, influential sci-fi movie that establishes its world much better. And that is Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, the original. So Blade Runner is, in my opinion, the best case of a movie establishing its world by having our characters interact. So we don't see hours of B-roll in Blade Runner that's just showing the world. No, we follow Harrison Ford as he walks around the dystopian Los Angeles and interacts with people and buildings and places. And that is how we are shown the world. You know, we pick up snippets of dialogue about the off-world colony. And that makes us wonder, like, ooh, okay, what's going on there? But we don't see it. But we do see this dystopian world that they live in. And we see that through the actions of the characters and the narrative drawing you there. In 2001, Stanley Kubrick takes you away from the character and just shows you the world. He shows you, like, the spaceships and all of that. But I feel like the movie would have benefited from having a more character focus. Like I said in the writing section, if we had seen an hour Hal and the astronauts interacting normally, it would have been a lot more impactful for Hal's fall, where he turns evil. And we would have had truly higher stakes.
Okay, so I didn't really put much about world building at all in my directing. I really didn't even consider world building whenever I watched the movie or whenever I was typing my notes.
Then what was the point of the B-roll? Like, all the scenes where it's just showing what's happening.
I think that's to show not necessarily, like, how the world itself is in this movie. It's to show such a, how do I describe this? I'm trying to figure out the best words to put in here. Unless Dylan has something to say and he can jump in on it.
Well, yeah. Dylan's a smart guy.
Dylan is a smart guy.
Are you calling it a friend?
Not really.
Hey, I'm going to phone a friend here and have Dylan answer that question.
Okay, Dylan?
Yeah, well, like I said before, I think the color sequence in the film is showcasing the astronaut, Dave, flying through. He flies to the monolith and he sees all the different colors and everything. And to me, I always interpreted it as the mind of humanity is can't comprehend, you know, everything that the aliens or whatever you want to say, alternate beings are conveying to him. He can't comprehend it. So I think dialogue wouldn't really suffice that scene, because I'm trying to imagine it if that actually did happen. I someone would just be so in awe, just in total awe, and not say anything about it. But yeah, I think that's what Kubrick was really trying to do there with the color sequence. I can't really say much about the B-roll for the spaceship as I can the more other stuff, like the end of the movie and the color sequence and the beginning.
And you know, Dylan, you've seen Interstellar, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And it's better than this because it accomplishes what this is trying to do, but better. So,
well, I disagree. Interstellar came out 40 years after 2001: A Space Odyssey. I feel like there's a lot of influence in 2001: A Space Odyssey that you can see in Interstellar.
Of course. Mm. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to use that as an example of how it could have been better, which I am. So, Interstellar thematically draws a lot from 2001. It focuses on an alien civilization, an alien power, like a god, if you will, that is trying to guide humanity to saving its civilization. And that is not touched on too much in the movie. It's only really brought to the forefront at the end after Cooper goes in the black hole and he like falls in like the four-dimensional, like time is meaningless, like a little matrix thing. And through that and reliving past with his daughter, we understand, Cooper understands what the goal of that alien civilization is. But again, in terms of character, having Cooper there interacting with that dimension and Cooper coming to the realization himself is much better. And that whole scene lasts a shorter amount of time than the color sequence in 2001 does. And that's not even counting the, like, the room scene with, like, the neoclassical room and, like, all the past visions of Dave's self.
I think the Interstellar scene is so much different for one simple reason. It's because the alien beings in both of these movies have totally different goals. In this movie, in 2001, how I feel is that these aliens kind of just instill knowledge into the early humans and see how it plays out, see what happens to them. And it shows at the very end that because these aliens have instilled knowledge in these apes, they brought them all the way to where this alien being or these alien beings are located, right here to the monolith on Jupiter. I think that the intentions of both aliens are different. This one isn't supposed to, in 2001, they're not supposed to have you comprehend them. They're not supposed to have you understand. Instead, they're going to show you what it's like to be a person who just ran into a monolith on Jupiter and is now being dumped with information that they have never even seen or comprehended or even heard of, you know?
Yeah,
with no intent of the aliens themselves explaining it to them.
Well, yeah, but you can argue the intentions of the alien civilizations all day, but I'm using that example not to discuss the intentions of the aliens, but to discuss how Kubrick could have cut down that scene to be more meaningful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And what I mean is that because he's made it the way it is, and how it is like in this crazy acid trip of trying to comprehend what's going on, that leaves you more with what he intended. Was you're not supposed to really understand what these are, how this is, because nobody's ever been in this situation. You know, nobody's ever had this amount of knowledge dumped into them.
So then what's the point?
What do you mean, what's the point? The point is to show that the human mind isn't comprehending this, like these, what Dylan said, how it's not supposed to be comprehended.
See, you know, as you know, I have a deep love of high science fiction movies. However, I have a very big problem with movies that are style over substance. And this is going to be a very controversial take, especially in science fiction circles. But I think that 2001, for the most part, is way more style over substance. I feel a lot of the substance that has been created for 2001 has been created by its audiences and not by the actual intentions of the director.
I'm going to use that to segue into my directing notes because I have talked about that exactly.
Okay, go for it.
So I don't think Kubrick's intentions here were for people to watch these movies and with such a closed mind and develop any real substance. Instead, he wants to leave it open so it doesn't feel like his movie sometimes. It feels like yours. And you're the one who infers every moment. You're the one who chooses the meaning of the Star Child, the one who chooses if the monolith was organic or artificial. Or you're the one who decides what really happened to Dave. It's to make it feel like it's yours just as much as it feels like mine. It leaves it so open that it's our movie and not necessarily Stanley Kubrick's movie, although it's oftentimes referred to as his. To quote him himself, the very meaninglessness of life forces a man to create his own meaning. I mean, it's no question that Stanley Kubrick is a mastermind at everything he does when it comes to cinematography and special effects and especially subliminal messaging. Like, one cool thing about this movie that I absolutely loved when I learned, there's obviously the chess game that Hal and Poole play at the very beginning. If you look at the moves on the chess game, okay, and then you put them side by side with how Dave moves around in that room at the end, they line up perfectly with how he moves. I remember seeing that and I was like, God, Stanley Kubrick's a genius. That's insane. Like, I would have never, like, it's something you obviously don't comprehend the first time you watch it, but it's something you like have to analyze and figure it out. But when it comes to directing a itself, I find Stanley Kubrick to be, I mean, he's obviously one of the most influential directors of all time. I think it was absolutely perfect how he created this movie. I mean, I think his depiction of space as the silent void, while also playing such this crazy orchestra to depict the epicness of the space stations and rocket ships, and he's able to give you an unsettling feeling of what really lies behind the stars, but also showing the monumental achievements man has made during this time period.
That's a great point.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick is obviously a detail-oriented filmmaker. That's why I chose not to critique any of his, you know, technical accomplishments in this movie. Like, he obviously did his planning. He does his planning in all of his movies. But, you know, so first of all, I love Stanley Kubrick. Like, I love The Shining. I love all the detail in it. And I feel like The Shining and even some of his other movies, like Dr. Strangelove, are so much better in terms of conveying their themes than 2001. You know, I'm not going to say he messed up in his direction in 2001, I'm simply saying his direction could have been a lot better in actually conveying a story to be interpreted rather than just like a series of concepts and thematic elements that were left to the audience to interpret.
I feel like there's enough substance though to where you can understand and comprehend the entire movie on a casual standpoint. You know, obviously the ending, it's a lot of interpretation, but if you just watch it and you pay attention to it the entire time, you can tell, like, these are the events that are unfolding and here's what it leads to. I feel like his vision of this movie, although it's a lot of interpretation over telling you exactly what's going on, but I think that's what the vision was here, was that to be able to interpret the movie for yourself and be able to, but it gave you just enough substance to where you were able to do that. It leaves you open to interpretation, but at the same time, it doesn't leave you in the dark the entire time, as long as you're paying attention the entire time.
I mean, fair enough. Agree to disagree. I've said all I've said on the directing, unless you have more.
Except for, I love Stanley Kubrick, and if you're listening to this from the grave, Stanley Kubrick, I love you.
And before we move on, I want to hear Luke's voice.
So for me, I have a different, because of like the B-roll footage and why all that is in there and why there's so sparse dialogue. Well, I think that is only there really to, or not only there, but mainly there to distract from the paper thin narrative.
I completely agree. Completely agree, Luke.
Yeah, because here's the thing is that, yes, obviously we cannot critique that. Stanley Kubrick, amazing filmmaker, one of the best ever. Tyler didn't say anything to discredit his technical achievements because you can't. It's impossible. I mean, it's revolutionary. The movie's beautiful. You can't dispute that. But I think it's also Stanley Kubrick. It's a fault of the writing, but it's also a fault of Stanley Kubrick to just be like, well, there's nothing that I have happening in this scene. But for some reason, I want it to be 2.5 hours. So I will just cut to a beautiful scene.
And you know what?
Nothing's going on. And it's like if you go to an art gallery, it's like looking at a painting and being like when you look at a painting, you're like, oh, this is really pretty. Abstract art. But it's not moving. Nothing's happening. Obviously, you can sit there and look at something and appreciate how beautiful it is. But when there's nothing really going on, it's really only there to distract you from the deficiencies of the writing. So Stanley Kubrick uses all the amazing effects really as a crutch to distract from how weak the narrative of the movie is.
And you know,
that's all I have to say about it.
You know what? Luke just put something back in my head that I completely forgot to mention. You know, our main thing is that the narrative is paper thin. Like, there's not much there. To me, it's even more inexcusable because Stanley Kubrick developed this movie with the author of the short story.
Yes, so, yep, I agree.
So this kind of combines writing and directing. They should have been able to come up with a much thicker story, you know, since he was working with the guy that wrote the story that he's adapting.
Yeah, he like co-wrote the script, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's the intention, though. I don't think the narrative is paper thin and that's a mistake on Stanley Kubrick's part. I don't think his whole intention was to leave the narrative so open and to instead use tons of special effects and use these scenes rather than the dialogue to push the movie forward. I think he uses that to his advantage rather than using the special effects as a crutch. I feel like especially with the color scene, and I understand the spaceships can drag a little bit because it's just showing a lot of space and the monuments of how man has gotten this far with what we started with and whatnot. I just believe the narrative, although it's short, and especially the only main plot point is with Hal, leaving the rest of the movie open to interpretation, but still showing how you got from point A to point C, I think works out perfectly. I think it's perfectly progresses
into each scene.
I think this round is going to just be a difference of opinions, and we can leave it up to Ray to determine who is presenting.
Yeah, thanks.
There's actually a secret round six here where I just fight Tyler and Luke, and Dylan joins me on it.
This fight, I would win easy.
Let's settle this on Rust.
2v2 on Rust. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, yeah. So Dylan, anything to add, Luke?
You know, I agree to some extent what Luke said. I really think this film is an art piece. I know Kubrick is very fond of art, and he utilizes a lot of paintings and strange art in a lot of his movies. He does in The Shining, Clockwork Orange, this movie. At the end, where they have those weird kind of Renaissance Gothic paintings on the wall, and that really creepy room at the end, you know, I think that the special effects and everything that you guys were talking about, I think enhances the narrative entirely. Much of what Tristan was saying, I think Kubrick going into this knew that while it would be seen as a stylistic masterpiece and a very technical masterpiece, I think he knew going into it that people would be divided on it and really push the boundaries of story making and stories in film. But I really appreciate storytelling told without dialogue. It's extremely hard to do, like I said before, and I think he does an exemplary job of it throughout the film. I'm trying to think of what else. There was something one of you guys said that I thought was interesting. It just slipped my mind. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much all I have on that.
Well, Dylan, yeah, and I agree with you on the sense, and I do know, I did some reading before this, that Stanley Kubrick loves art, and he does use a lot of it in his movies. You're right about that. And utilizing it, to me, though, is different than 45% of your movie basically just being that. That's how I feel about that. I mean, again, that some people really like that. You know, some people enjoy a style over substance type of film, which I think this is. For me, that's just not a very enjoyable movie to me. It's just pretty looking, but if there's no substance there, it's hard to hold my attention. But again, this is just difference of opinion.
And when you say that, Luke, it for me, not really so much the art, but like just the B-roll. Ad Astra was kind of like that for me too. I was just bored.
Get out.
I agree.
You know, just to end this whole directing segment, you know, I just want to say Luke's final point kind of backs up what I said earlier, that this entire movie could have been a 10-minute technical demonstration or a short film. Ray, like, you haven't seen this movie, so I just want to point out this is a 2-hour and 38-minute movie, and there is barely half an hour of an actual narrative to keep you invested.
Anyone have anything further to add?
I just want to say Tyler's stupid, and that's all. Okay. I'm just kidding, Tyler. You can be wrong and be smart.
Love you long time.
Love you long time. Hey, that's a reference to a Stanley Kubrick movie, Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket,
I love that movie.
Moving on to round three now. I really honestly don't remember who started the last round, but
it was Tyler. Very
interesting round. Whoever wants to start, go ahead.
I'll go.
On with the acting.
I'll go. Mine's really short because there's not a lot of acting in this movie. Obviously, there's a total of four main actors. Well, five if you include the head monkey, which I'm pretty sure his name is Moonwatcher. So they don't get a lot of screen time, but every time that somebody's on screen, they're especially Hal, Dave, and Frank. It's a testament to how great. Like, even though, like, I know you say that the Hal segment is the best part of the entire movie, you can cut off every other part of it and it'd be good. But that just shows you how great that scene is, the Hal episode. You know, because Dave and Frank and Hal all kill it. Dave and Frank, I think it's cool because they show no emotion a lot of the time. Especially, you don't really see Frank use any emotion, and Dave doesn't until he, one, unplugs Hal, and two, when he's going through all the colors and whatnot. But it shows how, like, serious they are about this mission and how it just conveys through how they communicate. Like, whenever Frank and Dave are talking in the pod, neither of them are freaking out that Hal messed up. You know, they're saying, okay, he messed up. Here's how we're going to fix it. Here's exactly what we're going to do to if he did actually make a mistake. And so it's cool that these actors were able to convey that with not, and I know it's not too hard to convey it with no emotion, but they kept it consistent until the end when Dave's floating through space and you can see his face. I don't even know if it's terror or if it's pain, but it looks not fun. It does not look fun. Yeah, and also Hal's voice actor, he absolutely kills it. The monotone and it just leaves this eerie feeling every time he speaks to you.
It's like effect on his voice. Yeah, like weird crackly tape effect. It's awesome.
Oh, it's so good. But that's about all I have for acting. I'll just sit here and banter with Tyler.
Yeah,
let's get into it, Tyler.
My acting argument will also be very short. You know, Tristan, gotta say, it wasn't much there for that argument, man.
I have 3 bullet points. There's not a lot of acting. There just really isn't.
Exactly. You know, and in an argument against acting, I think that my point is quite simple and it will be effective. There is not a single actor in this movie that could not be replaced with another actor. There is one moment of standout acting in this movie, and that is by Douglas Rain in The Death of Hal. You know, his shift between, like, he basically goes through like the 5 stages of grief, and I don't know those off the top of my head, but his whole arc in realizing that he is dying and that there's nothing he can do to stop it is great. However, I don't think it's so great that it couldn't be done by another actor. I think there are plenty of actors that could have done the same thing, but probably better. And, you know, and David and Frank, you know, there's absolutely nothing there that couldn't have been done by another actor. Like, there's no standout moments from either of them, I don't think. You know, we've, like, debated several movies on this podcast now, and in every single one of them, there were, like, specific moments of acting fidelity that we could talk about, but in this movie, there's really not one. Like, for the best acting performance to come from a character that we don't even see on screen is pretty just, it condemns any sort of acting argument other than the acting is nothing special.
I don't think the movie was built with the intention of heavy acting anyways. I think although there isn't a lot of acting, but the acting they have is pretty solid, and you could, like you said, you could replace Dave and Frank, because, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know really any, I'm not too into 1960s and early like 60s and 50s film. I don't know a whole lot about it. I don't know a lot of actors from that time period.
I'll tell you now that none of the actors in this movie are relevant.
Yeah, I know. I was looking into them, and none of them really had any bigger roles except for 2010, the year we make Contact, the sequel to 2001 A Space Odyssey. But there's not a lot of acting, but the movie isn't built to have that much acting. A lot of it is Stanley Kubrick style directing, which is open to interpretation.
Okay, but Tristan, you say it's a Stanley Kubrick movie. The Shining has some of the best acting we've ever seen.
That's true. That is very true. But I mean, like, in
there's
this
none of those
certain
moments in this movie.
In this certain style. Okay, so the thing about Stanley Kubrick is he likes to, or at least you can see it in a lot of his movies, that some of them are acting heavy, such as The Clockwork Orange or The Shining, but then some of them are just are a lot of interpretation-based, and this is the perfect example of it. This movie isn't supposed to have acting as necessarily a crutch, because it doesn't have a lot of dialogue written in there to begin with. The acting, it can't be treated as something that needs to be important, because it's not written to be important. You know, it can't be, the acting can't be necessarily a huge flaw of the movie just because there's not a lot of it in it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you're picking up what I'm putting down. But that's really all I have to say about acting.
That's all I have to say.
Luke, do you like to add?
Yeah, I would. On this show, it's kind of like my thing. I'm really good. I'm the one who like knows all kinds of like facts about movies and stuff. Like, yeah. Tyler knows more about directing stuff. But like, I know like who directed what and what won what award this year. And I actually had to look up the cast of this movie. I knew Douglas Rain already, because Douglas Rain's the best actor in the movie. But like the other guys who play Dave and Frank, mainly stage actors, they haven't been in really a whole lot of movies. And I think that they are serviceable in the movie. I mean, they do what they're supposed to do. But Tristan said, and Tristan, to kind of touch on what he said a minute ago, how it wasn't written to be important. Well, but then at the same time, he says that the how part is so good and stuff. Well, if the writing and stuff isn't important, then why is it there? You know, this could have just been an art house movie where it was just no characters and no dialogue and stuff and be just as effective as what you were saying. So while this is my favorite part of the movie, I think that for a movie to be written where the dialogue isn't important is a fault of the script. Like, even if it was written with that intention, I still think that makes the script weak. And that is a script writing issue. But like they said, there's not much to really add in the acting part. I mean, they're serviceable. They do okay. I do think, though, that since this movie is entirely up to audience interpretation, Dave definitely functions as like the audience character in a movie. And movies have that, you know what I mean? Where you could say he's the main character, and he probably is, he's the main human character, but he's really only there so the audience has someone to experience the movie through their eyes. But if it's so up to interpretation, I'd argue that you could just go ahead and say that it's so up to interpretation. You don't even need an audience character. You don't even need characters or anything. And I think that's a fault when the best part of your movie, which is the Hal storyline, doesn't even need to be there, really. You know, if it's all open to interpretation, just go all the way with it. So I think that, you know, I mean, again, I know that touches on some other topics. Basically, I used this time just now to touch on, like, things that I missed out talking about before. But the acting is, like, serviceable at best, aside from Douglas Rain, who's very good. But yeah, I mean, again, the character of Dave, you don't even really need him. There doesn't really need to be an audience character. That's all he functions as. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Dylan?
Okay, yeah. I have a few things. What's what they were saying about Kubrick didn't use huge actors in this movie, and I really think that was the point of it. You know, if this movie was made today or maybe a little bit before a day and they had, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in it or something like that, I think it would suck. I think being the job of being an astronaut, I think is not as hyped up as it seems to be. I imagine it would be a very boring task, you know, staring at a lot of screens and computers all day, looking out into space. So having someone in there, you know, like a big actor or something like that, I think would totally, you know, deter away from the point of the movie and the a lot of the things that Tristan has already said. I disagree with what Tyler said about Hal. I think to portray a performance of a character that is only audible that you don't see, he does a remarkable, chilling job at it. I think you really feel his presence in the film, I think, which is remarkable because you never see him. I mean, you see like the little circle with like the red dot, his monitor or whatever. But yeah, I think those actors did a great job. And I thought Luke brought up a good point about how Dave serves as the audience, a person that the audience can identify with. And I think he does a great job of portraying that in the film.
And just one thing, my point wasn't that he didn't do a great job at Hal, because he obviously did. My point could have done, like, someone else could have done the exact same thing and probably better.
I disagree. I don't think anyone could. Okay, that's what I meant to say. I disagree.
Okay. Dylan, anyone have anything further to add?
Nope. Nope, I'm good.
I'm good, yeah.
All right. Acting round is over now. Let's get into the closing argument. Who would like to start?
So, you know, just for my closing argument, I'll kind of recap everything I said. You know, obviously 2001 is an influential movie. You know, I've cited some examples, you know, of Blade Runner, of Interstellar. These movies, obviously, they were inspired by some of the things that 2001 did. And, you know, it's directed by Stanley Kubrick. He's amazing. However, I feel that his decisions in this movie ended up hurting the movie in a way. I felt like there was far, far too much style over substance. You know, the narrative I didn't think was really there. The acting wasn't really anything special. And overall, it's not a movie that I, you know, want to go back. In fact, I rewatched it again for this episode, and I liked it even less this time than I did the first time. I feel that, for me at least, on multiple rewatches, the movie loses whatever type of awe it had. You know, and Tristan mentioned earlier that the whole bone to space station thing kind of lost its touch on a rewatch. I think the most of the movie does. Like, once you've seen it once and know where everything goes, it's even more boring than the first time. And that is my closing argument.
All right, Tristan.
This movie did a lot for cinema. And the argument I see you guys use a lot is the style over substance. But I think that this movie gives just enough substance to mesh perfectly with its style. I think it gives you enough substance to where you can understand the plot and you understand what's going on throughout it. And it gives you these tense moments when, like, whenever you see the monolith and it has that like, the people screaming is what it sounds like for the music. And it's just, it makes you uncomfortable and it makes you tense and it makes you understand this is not something normal. I think that's the entire thing of the movie, is to leave you with this eerie feeling of what really does lie beyond the stars, other than just them stars, you know, or planets. There's something so much more out there, and our human minds can't really comprehend it. It's a testament to what the human imagination can truly do. And to quote Kubrick on that, if it can be written or thought, it can be filmed.
Luke, do you have anything to add?
Yes, I do. So to kind of close out, I'll keep it brief. Basically, and Tristan said something earlier that I think perfectly describes the movie. He said it's like basically like Mad Libs as a movie. And I understand that that is the goal of the movie. You know, that's obviously clear. However, I like to, as an audience member, and I think I speak for a lot of audience members out there, I like to have just a little bit of a guide. Obviously, I want to see obviously, I like that things are open to interpretation and they're not physically just saying everything that is happening exactly. And this is how it's going down. And, you know, I like that they allow us to infer some things, but when the entire movie is inferring, then that is just a weakness of script. And like Tyler said at the beginning, that it's adapted from a 6-page short story. And I use we keep saying style over substance, because for me, this movie is a movie that has a 10 out of 10 substance with like a 2 to a 3 out of 10 narrative. And I think that the style essentially is there to distract from how weak the actual substance of the movie is. There's not a lot of meat on the bones of the movie. And when 45% of your movie is just B-roll footage and everything like that, and just basically just pretty looking visuals, then that tells you how weak the storytelling on display is. So that's all I have to say about it.
All right, Dylan, looks like it's up to you now.
Yeah, I think this is, as it's been mentioned multiple times before, I think this is one of the greatest sci-fi films ever. Very influential. I know a lot of the crew that worked in this movie worked on Star Wars. A lot of the space scenes look really similar, which I thought was cool. I didn't know that. But, you know, it's, to me, what makes me love the movie, I think, so much is that it was made so long ago with not as many of the resources that we have today. And it was still, it's still great. Like, I'm looking through a list of sci-fi movies that came out, you know, recently, and they're horrible. I'm looking through, I hate most of all of these. The Predator remake, one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That was Passengers, another, talk about a boring movie. That movie, terrible. Alien Covenant, I know we talked about that last time. I absolutely abhor that movie. But I mean, you know, there are some good ones. I'm not going to say that all sci-fi movies now are bad. There are some good ones. Ex Machina, I know Tyler talked about that one. That's a great film. Interstellar, Blade Runner 2049 is one of my favorite movies ever. It's a great sequel. But the reason I like it so much is because when it was made, it's amazing that someone could come up with something like that in that time period. As opposed, I could see something like that today being influenced by everything that happens now and that we know now. That's all I have to say.
Anyone else have anything to add?
Nada.
Not really.
Nope.
All right. I do have a winner, but first, let's
break it down.
The opening argument was won by Team Tristan and Team Dylan.
This was unexpectedly.
Let's go.
It was won because of, really, Tyler, a lot of your opening argument was, you were saying a lot of good things about it at first before you got into some of your flaws with this movie. And I think that Tristan and Dylan just had more to say in the opening argument.
Yeah, of course. That was the point.
In the writing round, I will say that this is the closest debate I've ever had to judge. Oh, so don't, Lord, get discouraged here when, really, I tell you that Tristan and Dylan also won the writing
round. Let's go!
What?
Let's go!
Really?
Whoa. Yeah. Okay, I felt confident about that one.
This is it.
Yeah.
I felt really confident about the writing one. The rest of it,
fell
off.
You guys went really back and forth about the whole slow burn thing in this round, but it was Dylan in the end that ended up getting me, just backing Tristan up with more details, more things to say. You guys were just a lot back and forth there, and I think that Tristan and Dylan had just a little bit more.
Okay.
But the directing round goes to Tyler and Luke.
Yep.
Okay.
Which,
yep,
is,
I thought so, yeah.
Which is very interesting because it was probably one of the harder rounds for them to win here.
Yeah, for sure.
But it just got me in this round with the B-roll. You know, they talked a lot about it just being there to fill up, a lot of style over substance. They had a lot of good arguments this round, and I just think that Tyler came out strong, showing a lot of examples from even like Blade Runner, other sci-fi movies that have just done it better, and I think that was just enough for me to give them the win for that round. Tyler and Luke also win the acting round, so
okay,
this makes it a tied up 2-2 going into the closing argument. It's pretty self-explanatory. There's just not much there as far as acting when it comes to this movie, from what I've heard from you guys. But the winner is Tristan and Dylan.
Yes.
Let's go!
Yeah.
Let's go!
Yeah.
I texted him like 3 days ago. I was like, Tyler, I'm coming in and I'm taking that perfect record from you. And I don't ever want to be on this podcast again, but I'm just going to take my win and run away with it.
Undefeated. Take it and go, baby.
Just take it and go.
I'm undefeated by people not named Tristan.
That's true. He's got there, but...
And Dylan. He's been,
and you Dylan, yeah.
Tristan alone.
What is my first one.
Ray, can you explain why me and Dylan are far superior than Tyler and Luke could ever be?
I like the quote, Tristan, honestly.
Yes! That was a very last-minute thing.
I liked how you were talking about the human imagination and just how the movie's left open for the viewer to break down for themselves.
I will say, Tyler and Luke, you guys absolutely schooled me on the directing and acting, which is so weird to me, the directing you schooled me on, because
I schooled you on the writing, amazing. Too.
That's debatable. obviously, that's debatable.
I like what Luke said about the Dave character being in serves as like the audience member.
Yeah, Luke
really thought of it.
And yeah,
Luke was killing it today. I will give Luke full props. He was really killing it today, just staying in the shadows, soaking up his info, speaking sneak when attacking. He needed to speak.
Yeah. Luke would come in, hit me with a left hook, and then run back.
Yeah,
just go back and I didn't have time to say anything. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, Luke come out and say something to Tristan, and Tristan would be like, I'm gonna have to phone Dylan on this one.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna let Dylan talk.
That's when I knew that he lost the directing round when he called Dylan in to help.
Yeah, when I called Dylan, I'm like, oh, okay. Thought it was gonna be easy, but just saying Stanley Kubrick, just saying his name, and it'd be over.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun. That's a good time. Yeah, okay, so it's me working with this one girl we work with. So I'm working the box office, and I'm a manager at this, or I'm a supervisor at this point. She's working concession right beside me, and next thing you know, I see this solid 6'7" and 250-pound dude come in with two smaller dudes beside him, and he comes barging in, and he's like, I got a question to ask you. I'm like, yeah, what's up? What can I help you with? He's like, I want to bring the entire KCU football team in to watch a movie. Can you give me a discount? Well, today is $5 Tuesday, okay? And so that was about the only discount I could do for
you. Know, I hold that what you should have done is just not say anything about
I didn't say anything about $5 Tuesday. I didn't yet. I was gonna get to it later, but I never got the chance to.
Okay.
So he says Downtown and Cinemark just offered me $350 to bring all 100-something of them in, and he was like, we'd rather go here because it's closer to the school or whatever. And I was like, that's a crazy discount, because what it's pulling up here is that I can get you all in for $700, and if I did their price, it would be around $500. I can't remember what their exact number was on how many people were coming, but I was like, let me go ask my other manager, which was that one girl who was a manager. I was like, hey, woman, girl, person, female, do we have any sort of group discounts for large groups? And she said, no, we don't. So I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And so I went back to him and told him we didn't have any discounts for him. And so he says, so you're going to turn down all this money? And so I'm taken aback. I'm like, turn down all this money? What do you mean turn down all this money? You just shot me a price, and I'm telling you what my price is. Is you're going to turn down $350? That's just a bad business deal. No, it's not. I don't know why, but that immediately made me mad. It made me so angry that he would sit here and just tell me that what I'm doing is wrong. And so I'm like, sir, there's nothing I can do here. I can't just type in a magic number and give you the price you want. You know, there's physically no way for me to input this discount this for you to have. And so he turns to the guy behind him. He's like, this is a piss poor business deal, don't you think? And Tyler, I don't know if you remember this story, but do you remember the one story about the Jennifer Lawrence guy?
Yes, I do.
It was the guy who looked really awkward whenever that one guy was talking to us. He was just standing there, like froze up like a deer in headlights. He had no idea what was going on. Yeah. And he was like, I have no idea if it's a bad business deal. So this guy starts calling me all kinds of words that I cannot say because I might have family members watching this. But at the very end, he says, are you kidding with me right now? At this point, I'm fed up. He's insulted me in front of all these coaches and this person that I work with. And I look him dead in the eyes to say, I'm dead serious. And the man turns around and just storms off. And his assistant coaches are like, I'm so sorry. And everyone's like, no, you're not. You're not that sorry. But apparently afterwards, they ended up going to Cinemark. And George had called Cinemark, was like, hey, did they come down there and you offer them $350 for all of them to see that movie? And they were like, God, no. They were like, we told them we had a discount, but all we gave them was the Tuesday discount. That's all they did for them. Yeah, that was not a fun experience. And now I hold that against KCU for the rest of my life.
The athletic director was not representing a Christian school very well.
That was the most unchristian person I've ever seen.
Seriously, yeah.
Absurd.
I've heard that place isn't very solid, but I won't get into it. But
still. I've heard the same, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I hate that guy. Thanks for coming to my tech talk.
All right, and with that, we're going to bring another episode of the Cinebros Podcast to a close. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to see more, you can follow us on all of our social media at CinebrosP on Twitter, Cinebros Podcast on Instagram, Cinebros Podcast on Facebook. If you have a Reddit, we have our own subreddit at Cinebros Podcast, where you can discuss with other members of the community. Anything? Have anything else to say?
I don't think so. Thanks for listening.
Anything you'd like us to watch?